I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. It's the first Monday of the month, and that means Dr. John Smarr joins us for the March edition of Midday on Health. Today, a look at diseases you might not know you have, and a specific look at autoimmune inflammatory vasculitis. That's what caused the death last week of comic actor and director Harold Ramis at age 69. Dr. Smarr joins us in the second hour of the show. Up front, a conversation with Robert Smith, the CEO and administrator of the Maryland Transit Administration. He's in charge of one of the largest intermodal public transportation systems in the country, from buses to light rail and metro. And on the horizon, the purple and red lines. My questions and yours for Robert Smith of the MTA after the news from NPR. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Midday, a snowy Monday in Baltimore and Maryland. Nice to have you with us. Dan Rodericks here on WYPR, Baltimore, WYPF, Frederick and Hagerstown, WYPO Ocean City, and the Eastern Shore, and we're streaming live online through WYPR.org. If you go to WYPR.org, make sure you check out the new Midday program page on our website. Happy to have you with us. We're going to have Midday on Health in the second hour of our show today. It's the first Monday in March, so Dr. John Smarr will be joining us again for his monthly rounds here at WYPR. In this hour of the show, though, we're going to talk about public transportation. The Red Line light rail system is the biggest public works project ever proposed for the city of Baltimore. Construction is slated to begin next year, and it's scheduled to go into operation by 2022. The Red Line would run east-west along a 14-mile route connecting Woodlawn and West Baltimore to the Johns Hopkins Bayview Medical Center campus over on the southeast side of the city. Meanwhile, the Purple Line project is underway, or was going to be getting underway. They're waiting for funding on that. The Purple Line project is in the pipeline for inside the Capitol Beltway, running from New Carrollton in Prince George's County to Bethesda in Montgomery County. So we're going to get to talk about that today and all things having to do with public transportation here in Central Maryland with Robert Smith. He is the CEO and administrator of the Maryland Transit Administration. Is happy to have you with us on our show today. Thanks for making it in, by the way, on this stormy day.
Thank you, Dan. It's great to be here. I look forward to talking with you.
Well, the first thing I saw when I crossed Charles Street to come into the station today was an MTA bus. So let's start with that, with the weather. The buses are running?
You know, they are. There's a couple of things. Our MART trains and our commuter buses, we're a statewide agency as well, Dan. And our commuter buses that run into Washington, D.C. and Baltimore and our MART trains, the vast majority of our riders are federal employees and state employees. So those services are not running today.
And mostly the decision is made because your customer base has the day off, has liberal leave policy. Is that why?
That's correct.
Okay. It's not because of the amount of snow that we received.
It's not. Although we do have a good deal of issues when we run our Brunswick line up into West Virginia with ice and snow that does create problems because our trains are electrified, as many of you know, your listeners know, and it creates trees that fall on our catenary and creates issues. But that's part of the reason, but primarily it's because the federal government has shut down.
So right here in the metro area, everything else is running?
We are. Our core service, which in the Baltimore region, includes our bus service, our metro subway, the light rail service, and our mobility for those with disabilities. Those services are running, though we do have some issues today. We're currently running with about 15 to 20 bus diversions, but otherwise we're out and doing the best we can on the streets.
Robert Smith is the CEO and administrator of the Maryland Transit Administration. This is your second time here in Maryland running this agency, right?
It is. I was here in 2002 to 2004 and working under the Glendenning administration. I'm proud to be back working for the governor and lieutenant governor and our secretary.
You were appointed last year, am I right? May of 2013?
2013.
So what were you doing in those years in between? Where were you, Robert?
I was actually working in the private sector. Spent a lot of time back in Chicago and doing a lot of work in the Northeast, working in a different industry.
What drew you to public transportation?
I've been doing that for the last 35 years. I love it.
How'd you get into it?
You know, I had an apprenticeship right out of school back in North Carolina. I had an apprenticeship with a local transit agency, and that started a process. You know, in this business, Dan, no one says I'm going to wake up and get into public transit, but it is something that's
that's
really...
why I asked that. Yeah. So it is something, I'm sorry, you didn't finish.
But it is something that once you're in it, it just gets in your blood, and it's much needed, and it's something that I really believe in.
Well, let's talk about light rail. I mentioned at the top of the show there, Red Line and Purple Line, and every time we bring up those topics, I need to get an update to make sure I understand where things are and our listeners understand where things are. First of all, the status of the Red Line in Baltimore City through Baltimore City, from Baltimore County through the city to southeast Baltimore.
Great. The Red Line is something that's much needed. We have a great support network. It's something that is much needed in the Baltimore region. As you said in your opening comments, it runs from Baltimore County in the Social Security area through downtown. And the unique part about it this time is that the Red Line is programmed to have tunneling through the city so that we can have better customer service with speed and the like, and ultimately making its way over to East Baltimore, which is the Bayview area,
right,
for Johns Hopkins.
Mm-hmm. More southeast side of the city.
Yes.
So what is the status of its funding, its approval, its permits, the federal government's role in it, all of that? Where does it all stand?
You know, we've gone through the process. We're currently now at the point where we have the governor, lieutenant governor, and the legislature did a great job last year in the Transportation Infrastructure Investment Act. So we've got the state funding. We're working with the local municipalities to get the local funding. We're at this point, and we hope in the matter of weeks that we'll know what the federal government will be doing as it relates to the federal share.
So you're expecting that soon?
Very soon, yes.
What is the current budgeted cost of the Red Line?
The Red Line is a $2.6 billion project for the Baltimore region, and that's about the going rate for projects of this size.
And you said local funding, so there's state funding. And then Baltimore City, Baltimore County would also be contributing to the cost?
Yes, that's correct.
And then there's the federal piece?
That's correct.
And what about the Purple Line? I mentioned that. It's inside the Beltway. Actually, comes outside the Beltway. Goes to New Carrollton. Is New Carrollton inside the Beltway?
Just outside.
Oh, it's just outside.
Yes.
Okay. New Carrollton to Bethesda, the Purple Line, 16 miles down there in the metro area of D.C. in Maryland. So what is the status of that?
Same. The funding is slightly different. It's a $2.2 billion project. It's state funding. There's local funding, but we're also, and federal as well, but we're also looking to work with the private sector. So it's a design, build, finance, operate, and maintain. The update on that one, Dan, is that we've gone through the process, and we've actually have four a short list of four concessionaires that are interested in providing proposals to us to fund, design, build, and operate.
In Baltimore City, we'll slip back to the Red Line and talk about that of interest to our listeners here. Moving from the Woodlawn area through West Baltimore along the Franklin-Mulberry Corridor, a lot of people will know that as the Highway to Nowhere, that big slab of concrete that runs Franklin-Mulberry Corridor on the west side, through downtown, right?
That's correct.
And coming out sort of in the Harbor East area toward Fells Point, Canton, over to Bayview. Is that about right?
That's about right.
Okay. And it crosses the lines of the light rail. It intersects with many major city streets. Where is the tunneling? Where is that scheduled to take place? About what area is that?
The tunneling, as you come generally out of the Highway to Nowhere, as you term that, we start tunneling just east of there and going through downtown and coming up in the Canton area, coming back above grade in that particular area.
That's a pretty long tunnel.
It is.
And that's a major part of the cost.
Major part of the cost, but I believe that we've learned lessons. We want to say that we've learned from our previous time. Our current light rail system has two characteristics that we're trying to go away from. One, we have currently the high floor technology. So you see the buses that come through downtown, you've got to walk upstairs to get on. Light rail systems that's been built in the last 20 years have low floor technology, and it's a lot more sleek and goes a lot better for customer service.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a lot more accessible for those with disabilities. The other lesson that we learned is that we stayed above grade. So it's very slow and cumbersome as we go down Howard Street. Though we're working with the city to try and improve that, We learned that lesson, and we wanted to do it right this time.
So you hope the speed increases through the tunnel.
That's correct.
I've heard people talk about, in fact, on this show last year, Robert Smith, about including streetcars or trolleys in this system, the Red Line system. Is it too late for that kind of thing?
You know, the decision for the alternative that we have was made some years ago. So for this project, I believe that we've passed that point. Although, as the administrator of the MTA and the transit person that I am, we look at all options of transit going forward. We think they really feed off of each other. As Baltimore becomes more and more viable, which I see that happening, we need additional types of things. Streetcars is something that's happening in a lot of industries or cities around the country, and it's something we should consider going forward. But for this one, I believe we've passed that point.
And one last question from me before our first break about funding, going back to funding for both the Red Line and the Purple Line. The state is waiting to hear from the federal government. I know that other municipalities and other systems are competing for federal money, and we all know about the status of federal money and the battles that go on in Congress over that. So it isn't a given yet, is it, that Maryland will get this money? I mean, we are competing with other systems, correct?
It's not a given, but I feel very, very positive about our options here. We have several things to our advantage. One, we have dedicated local funding, and I believe that our governor, lieutenant governor, legislature did something very courageous in order to do the funding, so that's there. We also have local support from both all the local governments that are involved, and we have all of our legislative elected officials are really on board. So from our congressional delegation to our governor to our local officials, that's something I think that's maybe unique to Maryland. If not, I believe that ours is more enthusiastic.
Robert Smith is the CEO and administrator of the Maryland Transit Administration. We're talking about we're not talking about planes, trains, and automobiles. We're talking about trains, buses, light rail, metro. What else?
And our mobility service.
Mobility service, the MARC trains, 410-662-8780 is the phone number for midday. This is your opportunity to ask a question about public transportation of our guest, Robert Smith. The email address for midday, you can write us a question. I'll read it on the air, midday@wypr.org. Tweet us at @MiddayWYPR. Also, toll-free long distance, if you're out there and you use the Brunswick line, 866-661-9309. This is Midday. Robert Smith, the CEO and administrator of the Maryland Transit Administration, for the second time on Midday for the first time today, 410-662-8780 for your questions for our guests. I have a question. December, I haven't had a chance to take advantage of this myself yet, but December, MTA announced that there would be weekend MARC service.
That's correct.
For the first time, right?
Correct.
How's that working out? This is March now.
It's actually going well. We're up to just over 6,000 trips per weekend, and we started just under 5,000 trips per weekend back in December.
6,000 trips?
That's correct.
What do you mean by trips?
Number of boardings.
Oh, that helps me a lot.
Okay.
Number of people getting on and off?
Getting on and off.
A boarding is getting on.
That's correct.
So the ridership, about 6,000 to 7,000 per weekend?
6,000, yes. And we clearly—
Is that good?
That's very good. We clearly expect that to grow. As the seasons change, we have opportunities to work not only in the Washington region but in the Baltimore region for exchanges as it relates to activities, events, sporting events, and we're just getting geared up. So that's where we are.
So you can catch the MARC train for those who aren't hip to the MARC train. You can catch it at the Penn Station.
Catch it at Penn Station here in the Baltimore region, or you can catch it at BWI. And it's a great rate. Our rates from BWI to Union Station is $6, and our rate from Penn Station to Union Station is $7.
A couple of questions that are related. Actually, both questions are so similar. I'm just going to read one email, this one from Tim. Tim is speaking for Bob, who wrote it with the same question almost at the same time by email to us. Tim says local bus service is a big part of what the MTA does and has plenty of room for improvement. Is there any improvement cheaper or easier than allowing riders to track bus locations in real time through a mobile app? Buses will always be late or crowded. We know that, but riders could plan better if we actually knew where the buses were. Of course, while this might also highlight problems in the system, the tracking could also lead to solutions. Will the tracking ever be there for riders? And Bob had a similar question about, you know, rider notification using smart technology.
That's great. I'd like to answer that in two different ways. One is that we're encouraging, and in fact, we're enthusiastic about encouraging our riders to be partners in helping us find solutions as we go forward. We know we have a lot of work to do, particularly in our core service, so we solicit that. The other is yes, as part of our transit modernization plan, we're looking to use technology completely different than we have in the past. And a big part of that is next train arrival and next bus arrival. We expect to have next bus arrival, the initial phase, to kick out this fall so that one could use their mobile app applications to know when the bus is coming. That helps in a variety of ways.
Tell us how that works. Have you seen it used in another city?
I have. It's not new technology. It's being used in other cities. Our initial phase of that is that a person would be able to stand at a bus stop that we will have put a 4 or 5 digit number on, and you would text that number to our website, and it would then be able to give you through GIS technology the next bus arrival for that particular stop.
That's pretty cool. So you expect some of that to come online in the coming year?
Oh, yes. We're moving as quick as possible to ensure that we can start piloting that in September, October of this year with a full rollout soon thereafter. And we're looking to have next train arrival for both our metro rail cars as well as our light rail cars on the platforms as well.
So in that case, you would just text in the train number?
Well, in that case, we have a fixed guideway, so we could use fiber to actually do that for us so that as the train moves along the track, it could trip certain triggers that would let you know next train arrival. So it's a different type technology.
I like that. That sounds really good. Let's take a call for Robert Smith, 410-662-8780, if you have questions about public transportation here in Maryland. Ed in Mount Vernon, welcome to Midday.
Good afternoon, Dan and Robert. I'm very concerned about the Red Line. It doesn't have transit rider support, although it has public official support, and it has business community support. And the reason it doesn't have transit rider support have to do with reliability issues. Nobody's done a collision frequency expectation study. It's because of low capacity. The modeling stretched out the ridership over the whole day to accommodate a vehicle that has less than one quarter the hauling capacity of the subway, but which is projected to carry more people. Flooding issues because the eastern portals in the floodplain of the harbor and a storm surge of the size of Sandy would overwhelm it by more than 9 feet. And so there, and speed issues. It's only 18.8 miles an hour compared to 32 for the subway. So there are a lot of issues here that the transit riders look at and say, this will not work effectively. And
well,
Robert
let's have
a lot of say in this.
Okay, you've raised several issues there, Ed, and I want to give Mr. Smith a chance to respond to those.
Okay. Thank you for your call, Ed, and we clearly are aware of the difference between light rail technology and subway in terms of its capacity, but the chosen alternative works best here in the Baltimore region. The chosen alternative in terms of cost, the chosen alternative in terms of getting it done at this particular time. Our light rail line is one that we expect by 2030 to have over 54,000 trips. Daily trips, and it's something that we believe has been modeled out. And we do believe that there are some that would like to see a different alternative, but this works best for the Baltimore region.
Okay. What about collision studies, frequency of collisions? He raised that specifically, and Ed also talked about the potential for flooding if we encounter sea level rise going forward here, which is what's predicted. So I know this is handed to you. You came here in May 2013. I don't know how long the Red Line has been studied now. It seems like at least 10 years to me, maybe. But, you know, I mean, Were all these questions examined? Do you know?
We do examine these questions. It's an exhausting process that you go through. One of the benefits that we have for the red line this time again, by learning from our past, is that we have double tracking throughout. So where you have double tracking, we don't necessarily have trains that need to switch and cross and use a single track. So that was an
important. Whole system is like that.
The whole red line.
The whole red line. I mean,
will be double tracked. Yes. Mm-hmm. So that was an important feature for us as well. And in terms of tunneling, there's whether you run a subway or whether you run a light rail that goes under, you run into the issues of how you deal with water and how you did with flooding and the like. And that's things that we have the best technology. We're continuing to make sure that we have that type of thing. And there are some disasters that will cause you to have issues, but I believe we have the right solution here.
Well, one last thing on flooding, though. It seems to me whenever a red line was first studied, and it could be 10 years, right? Maybe longer,
maybe
I'm
longer.
Not sure.
Yes.
That sea level rise specifically may not have been on the drawing board, something that was top of mind for people planning this originally. So I guess my question would be, have there been updates in the thinking about that?
Yes. In fact, even in the area where we come above grade, in the Fells Point Canton area, we've done boring to see what the water levels are there. And it's something that we're very much aware of. And it's things that, again, depending upon, it doesn't matter what alternative you use. If you're subway, you stay below ground all the way, primarily, or you're underground as well. So that has been thought through, and mitigation is planned in.
And all through this process, Robert, there have been public hearings held, public meetings held, public input. I mean, I've been reading about this in my own newspaper for several years now. All those things have been done, and we've reached the end of that process.
We've reached the end of that process, and there was considerable public input throughout the process. It's actually required to have that public input.
410-662-8780 is our phone number here from Midday. Robert Smith, our guest, CEO and administrator of the Maryland Transit Administration. Another question of concern about the red line. This was from Jennifer. She says, I'm a resident of Ten Hills, a historic neighborhood out on the west side of the city. My concern as a homeowner is how this red line will affect crime and traffic around our neighborhood. This will run down the center of Route 40, one block from our house. Also, when is this project due to be completed? I think the date I used was 2022. Is that right? Something like that?
2021.
2021, okay.
We're looking for the completion. And in effect, the red line, we've had a lot of public input. We've actually had a lot of conversation in the area where the alignment is actually scheduled to go. And we don't necessarily see it as bringing crime. That has typically been something in transit over the years that there's that perception. But we feel comfortable that replacing the current bus lines and what we have, that we are in good shape.
By the way, when Route 40 reaches that Franklin-Mulberry corridor that I talked about, the highway to nowhere, the major slab of concrete there, so that helps the system along, doesn't it? I mean, that's already in place. Will the red line actually run, on the median strip of what's known as the highway to nowhere, that Franklin-Mulberry corridor?
It will.
Is that
it
about
will.
Right?
So
okay.
We're taking as much advantage of existing right-of-way as we can.
Okay. Let's take another call. Doug in Reservoir Hill, thank you for calling. You're on Midday.
Well, thank you all for being there. Listen, I had a question a couple years ago, and it still persists, where school kids on the line that runs east, on North Avenue east and west, I think the term is stacking, where they'll be out there after school in the rain and everything and cold weather for like a half an hour, and all of a sudden there's no buses, and then all of a sudden in a half an hour wait or 45 minutes, here comes three buses in a row. And can't that be improved where they can be, don't the bus drivers see like three buses in a row?
Thank you. We recognize that we do have a problem. Our term that we use here, you use stacking, is called bus bunching. And it's been almost a decade since we've really had a comprehensive review of our bus system. And that's something we started last September. We will start making changes to our system and what's called running time to address the type issue that you're discussing. Those changes began in August of this year, where we're not only looking at changing our running time, are we going where people want us to go? And are we going where jobs are and where they actually live? And the public engagement process that we've done is we've listened to people like your listeners. We've had pop-up meetings at major transit centers. We have a website where people have given us input. We've had over 2,000 conversations about what can make our system a lot better. We know that our system has those issues, and we're doing it, and hopefully we're doing it in the right way. So we're engaging our customers. I really appreciate the calls that we're getting now, and we'll make note of that and add that to it as well. But we know that bus bunching is an issue. The unique issue that you talked about for school children is when bell times, when children come out, you do get a lot of boardings at one time. And we've got to do a better job of making sure that the supply of vehicles is consistent with the bell times. And we are just last week, met with the new CEO for Baltimore City Schools so that we have a better understanding of how the schools are let out, that we collaborate together so that we're consistent. So we'll add service that's consistent with their bell times to make this a lot better.
Hey, I have a question for you, Robert Smith. Because you were here once in charge of the MTA, went away for a while, and then came back starting May of last year. So I assume, major agenda items, the one we discussed today, red line, purple line. But I'm curious about this, that anyone who's been in Maryland working in transit all this time say to you, listen, you really got to do something about X. You know, this thing has been a problem for a while. Can you please get something done when it comes to this? And I'm talking about something internal, another administrator might have said to you. And secondly, is there a problem in the system that was there when you were here last time?
Yes.
That hasn't been remedied? Did you notice anything like that? But on the first part, yes. Can you think of one problem that another administrator said to you, Robert, please help us do something about this?
I'll give you a few, actually.
Okay.
And which is, we know that our core service, which is our bus service, which is the bus, metro, and light rail, that's 70% of our ridership. We know that, and we know we've got to repair it. So we know that the running time, and that's a technical term, how long it takes for a bus to go from one end of the route to the other, we know that that's out of whack, and we're replacing it. The other thing that we
out of whack, meaning there's too many delays?
Too many delays. And so we're working with the city in terms
of... Excuse me, but is that chronic throughout the system, or is that true of certain lines?
It's chronic throughout major lines within. And what we've done is we've had a piecemeal approach to repairing the system. What we're calling our bus network improvement project is a system-wide approach. And we're wanting to make sure that there's connectivity. We're trying to improve speed. We're trying to make sure that we go where our patrons want us to go and that we pick them up there. So there's a variety of things that we're doing. And for those that have been at some of our public engagement meetings, of which there were a lot throughout the metro area, we're getting great feedback. And the type of feedback we're hearing here this morning is not new. So that's one. So we know we've got to repair that. The other thing that we know we've got to do is to use technology differently. If we're going to do what the governor wants us to do and work towards the doubling of ridership, then we've got to use technology so that those that use us casually will use us more often because it's more predictable, more reliable, and the like. And in addition to that, I think, let me tell you what we've done great since I left. I believe that in following the governor's vision to improve the efficiency of buses and making them greener, now approaching 50% of our bus fleet has diesel electric hybrids, which means that we're much cleaner and greener than we were when I was here before. The other thing that I would like to say is that we've put in place the programs that were shovel ready so that when the funding came about, we were able to do some of this. And a couple of things. In place when I got here was the ability to do midlife overhaul for our light rail cars. We're at the midlife point for them. So that starts this spring. The other thing that we're doing is we're buying MARC bi-level cars. We have capacity issues on our MARC trains. And as a result, instead of making our platforms longer, we're buying more bi-level cars so that we can accommodate more of the demand. The other thing that
do we have any bi-level cars now? I haven't been on the MARC for a while.
Oh, yes, we do.
We
have them now, but we need more of them.
I see.
Particularly on the Brunswick line. And another I'd like to say is our subway system this year is 30 years old. So we're at the end of the useful life of those. And because we have now a process in place that we're doing maintenance on our tracks and also on our trains to take us into the next generation. So there's been a lot of great things going on as well.
We had an email here about the bus network improvement project. When will we start to see these improvements? And also, how can bus riders make their needs known? Is a question from Barbara.
Okay. We started the bus network improvement project in August of 2013. We will start making public our recommendations this April. We'll go back to the public, let them know what our recommendations are, and we will actually go back to the public and talk that through again by having meetings and so on. It's a collaborative approach that we're looking for.
What's the best way to get information about the bus network improvement project and also about the Red Line? I have a question here from one of our listeners who wants to know where can they go online to learn more about this?
You can go to mta.maryland.gov, and or if you have questions specifically and don't want to go on the intranet, you can call us at 410-539-5000, and that's our transit information line.
410-662-8780 is the phone number for Midday. If you have a question for Robert Smith, CEO and administrator of the Maryland Transit Administration, in the time remaining in our hour here, we'd like to get some questions for him. Our Midday email address, midday@wypr.org. I have more emails to read, and also you can send us a tweet, MiddayWYPR. Short break. We'll be right back. Dan wants to know why the light rail system is taking so long. He's speaking here of the Red Line. Houston was able to build a light rail system in a matter of years. And, you know, when William Donald Schaefer was governor, the do-it-now governor, we got a light rail in place pretty quickly when they built the Camden Yards, the sports complex down there. So Dan's question is, why has the Red Line taken so long?
You know, there's a couple of ways to look at that. I'm familiar with the Houston Metro system. And it took Houston a long time as well. What we don't talk about here is the planning process they went through and the like. And Houston is also had, with their revenues were different during that time. And we have a recent change in that we have the local funding to get this done. So that's a big part of it, having a political will and the funding to make it happen. And, you know, one other thing about our rail line, I'd like to say we have what's called our Economic Empowerment Program. If I could take just a moment, we have an opportunity where our empowerment program, it has two goals. One, in trying to develop local workforce development partners. And those partners like Goodwill Industries and the Center for Urban Families are helping train local residents to have skills that when we start building the Red Line, that they are available then and have the capacity to get jobs and to be a part of it.
To get hired for the actual construction of it and actually work on your system.
That's great.
Later on. Both. Both is the case?
Actual construction and ultimately down the road for getting jobs as well.
Because this construction is what, slated to be 4 to 5 years?
4 to 5 years, beginning in 2015. So our process is up and running. And not only are we looking at individuals to ensure that working through our development partners to be ready for that, but we're also looking to have our small businesses in the area prepared. How can we have small businesses that understand the bonding requirements and the certification requirements so that they can be good partners with the primes that ultimately come in? So it's important to us that all of this equals and translates into jobs.
$2.6 billion we're talking about so far, right?
That's correct.
Right. And so if folks are interested in that, I know a lot of people looking for jobs, looking for work down the line here in the future. So how do they get information about that? Where do you go?
Well, I tell you, there's a couple of things. As we take a look at that, our BaltimoreRedLine.com is one place that they could go. And let me tell you that we've already have 110 firms that are somewhere in the process right now of showing interest or actually preparing to be a part of our workshops that we're pushing.
Workshops where you would go to what, figure out what kind of jobs are going to be available, to learn about what kind of jobs are going to be available?
Correct.
Is that what you mean?
Jobs that are available, and how can I learn more about this?
410-662-8780 is our phone number, folks. Dan Roderick's here on Midday with Robert Smith, CEO and administrator of the Maryland Transit Administration. We'll take any question you have about buses, about light rail, about the Red Line, the Purple Line. Mark system, anything you like here. This is Ernest in Baltimore. Ernest, go right ahead with your question, please.
Yes, I have a concern about a certain bus. I used to catch it to school when I got off work, and it got so it would never be there. And I would call every day, and after a while, I imagine they got tired of me calling. They said, well, you don't have to call anymore because the supervisor's on it, but it never changed. The bus never showed up. I think the
bus
was running early.
Ernest, which bus was it?
Number 77.
The number 77. Where does the 77 run?
I used to catch it at Washington Boulevard and Hammonds Ferry Road.
Okay. And you said it was chronically late.
Chronically didn't show up.
Chronically didn't show up.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Do you know about that one, Robert?
I don't know that one specifically, but one thing that we have acknowledged through this process is that we have work to do on our core service. And we will start this next month, actually, putting out our recommendations that will go into effect this fall that will adjust and make a way for improving our service. We not only want to make sure the service is going in the right place, but it has good connectivity amongst themselves and with rail. One of the characteristics we're finding is that we have too many of our routes that are too long. They may start in northern Baltimore County and run all the way through going to the south. And one of the things that we're doing is breaking that up. And that should help with some of the problems that this caller is talking about.
I didn't even ask you about bus ridership. You know, all through the recession and thereafter, it seemed like ridership went up. The MTA was doing pretty well with ridership. So how are things in the last year or so? Can you talk about that?
In the last year or so, we have a mixed bag. Our MARC service is growing faster than we can keep up, particularly during the peak trips, and so is as mobility. In the last 12 months, the ridership on our bus and core service has remained flat. And that has more to do with that's a regional a phenomena and not just the MTA Maryland. So we, as an industry, and particularly here at the MTA, are looking to do all that we can to improve ridership and continue that long-term trend.
Here's another question for Robert Smith. MOLA? Is it MOLA? I'm sorry, MOLA in Baltimore.
Sorry, MALA.
MALA, I'm sorry.
Thank you. I appreciate your taking my call. I'm a regular bus rider. I don't own a car by choice, and I take buses all over the city and encourage others through my work and other efforts to take transit. And we have an ongoing concern, many of us, and I know Mr. Smith has touched upon this as well as the previous caller in a way. My concern is the comment and response we don't get. That is the 5395000 number. Myself and others have called, waited 10, 20, 30 minutes trying to express our concerns over, for example, as the previous caller said, no-show buses or waiting an hour, 45 minutes, and three buses that were supposed to come. None of them came, and those kinds of problems. And we just don't get a response. First, we're waiting so long to get through to the comment line, and then there's no follow-up whatsoever. We don't get an email, a callback, any sort of thing, information addressing how our concern is being addressed. And as the previous caller said, the situation just doesn't change.
All right, Mala, thank you.
Thank you. I get email at my email. And in your particular case, and we won't do it here online, but we'll get your information and make sure we have what you're describing is something that it's unacceptable with us. And at a minimum, we will make sure that our folks get back with you. So if you could, we'll get your information perhaps offline here, and we'll get back with you and deal with yours specifically.
Let's see. Some comments from and questions on Twitter that I'll read for you. This one is from Chance, who says, can MARC service be expanded to Wilmington to connect with the SEPTA? I need a cheap way to Philly, he says.
You know, we have something. All of our services have a 30-year plan or a very long and strategic plan. And there are strategic plans that we are going to expand MARC service, but nothing's that's on our next 5 or 6 year horizon. There are officials in the Elkton area and some of the others that would like that to take place, but not on the foreseeable future.
Is there any way to add a light rail stop? This is from McLean looking to add a new stop at Mill Number 1 and for Hamden users, closer than Woodbury. Get you closer to Hamden than the Woodbury stop.
You know, we do look at those types of things, and what we do is prioritize what we do with the finite amount of funding that we have, and we'll consider that, you know, as we go forward. We do get a lot of those types of requests.
Yeah. You know, I remember in a discussion about streetcars and trolleys that that's one of the things that, that recommends them, that they can make more frequent stops, almost like buses can stop, as opposed to the light rail where, you know, you have to go through more fuss in order to create a, even a soft stop for them.
That's correct. There are benefits and there are downsides to both types of services. And that's, as we went through that process about 10 years ago, this is the alternative that we chose. But there are benefits even for a bus where you have the opportunity to move bus stops more frequently.
Ann's question for you, Robert Smith, are there any plans to upgrade public transportation from Baltimore to Fort Meade, Laurel, and Annapolis? The present combination of trains and buses takes a very long time.
The answer is yes, but the implementations that we plan to get out of the current bus network improvement project are over a five-year period. We do recognize that there is economic growth, there's population growth in those areas, and that's a part of what this whole project is about. The Anne Arundel Mills area, there are areas in Baltimore we need to look at differently, and those are the types of things we'll be talking about in May and June of this year as we go back out to talk about our recommendations.
Okay, so that you are looking at that.
That's correct.
Those areas, particularly in Annapolis, and she said, of course, Fort Meade has really grown a lot with the base realignment that we've had here in the last few years.
It is, and in particular for Fort Meade, we've had more than one conversation with the commander of the fort, and we have some logistics that we need to work through as it relates to how far we can go up to and into the fort.
Eric, in Northeast Baltimore, we'll take your call for Robert Smith next. Hi.
Yes, hi. I wanted to ask whether there's any consideration being given to transit other than bus in Northeast Baltimore. It just seems that, our part of town never, ever figures. I've never heard it discussed publicly. And it's a massive part of the city. And it obviously decades ago had trolleys.
It had streetcars, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can, yeah,
York Road.
You can see the station out in Overlay. You can... You know, there's lots of old photographs of Hamilton along Harford Road.
Eric, are you talking about like just more bus service up and down Harford Road, Bel Air Road?
No, a light rail, a trolley, something other than ordinary road street vehicular transit.
The answer is yes. And one thing that's happening now and for the last 10 years or so is that we're being a lot more strategic. And as we look down the road, I would imagine that, well, not imagine, the current Purple Line alignment probably showed more promise in terms of ridership and potential for now. I believe that as we look in your area, you're correct. That is a dense area. It has a tremendous opportunity, and it's something that we need to continue to look at as we go forward.
Here's another question. This one has to do with Baltimore and Frederick. Wondering, what about that connection? Why is there no public transportation between Baltimore and Frederick?
There is none right now, and again, long-term, perhaps that is the case, but the travel patterns from Frederick seem to be more into the Washington, D.C. area, so we tend to look at ridership potential. We tend to look at just a potential for growing that corridor, and right now that doesn't plan out for us.
This is a question from Graham. He's wondering why Washington, D.C. has so much more subway than Baltimore does. A little bit of history there. You know, Baltimore subway was pretty late in coming, and political will and funding, I would say, is my answer to it. What's yours?
I believe at the end of the story, that's it. If you go back 40 years, if you go back 50 years, the build-out of the city's subway system looks eerily similar. It comes down to funding and choices that we need to make politically, whether we're going to do that.
Let's take another call. This is Scotty in Baltimore for Robert Smith. Hello.
Hi, Dan?
Yeah, go right ahead, Scotty.
Okay, hi. I love your show.
Thank you. The only reason
I'm calling is because I'm a teacher and we don't have school today. So, but I wanted to address a couple things very quickly. I do not ride the bus here, but did for years in New York City. And I would give the bus system here in Baltimore an E grade because, number one, I don't understand why there's no shelters for riders. I see people standing there. You wouldn't even know it was a bus stop, number one. And this whole idea about bus bunching is fascinating to me that he's come up with this term. And the problem is not the people driving the bus, but the management, Mr. Smith. It seems to me you're spreading yourself a little thin in terms of educating the public, et cetera, to build all these sites that you're planning on. But you said, and I quote, feedback is not new to you because things aren't changing. They're getting worse. And I see riders standing out there in the cold and the rain, and there's nothing to shelter them. I grew up in a society that really cared about its bus riders. And it seems to me that you don't care. I'll take my answer up here. Thanks, Dan.
Okay. Okay, very good feedback. Part of the feedback that we've been getting through the Bus Network Improvement Project is, you know, the location and spacing of our bus stops. We are getting comments as it relates to the number and the types of shelters that we have. And also in terms of what we need to do to improve the service. The Baltimore region, in comparison to New York City, right now there isn't a comparison. And we do recognize that we have lots of work to do. That's what we're looking to do through not only doing our bus network improvement project this time, but updating it every 5 years. The part about it that I'm excited about now is that we have funding to do a lot of the things that we could have done and should have done in the past.
Question for you about the current light rail system, the north-south system. Is any work being done to give the current light rail system preference at traffic control signals over cross-town vehicle traffic between Camden Yards and Mount Royal? The technology exists and can't be all that expensive relative to the time loss for passengers waiting at red lights.
You know, we're working very closely with our partners at the city, Baltimore City, and we do have in plans to try and make the experience on the light rail a lot better as it comes through the city.
Here's a question for you from Amy. I am concerned that the French rail company that has failed to pay any reparations for its role in transporting victims of the Holocaust to concentration camps during World War II is being considered as a contractor for the future Purple Line. How can the state of Maryland support a contractor with these ties? I support Senate Bill 754 and House Bill 1326, which would require the French company, CNCE, and its affiliates to pay reparations to the victims in order to be eligible to partner with the state on the Purple Line. Do you have any comment on that issue?
Well, yes. We have four potential bidders on our short list. And as far as the specific issue that she's addressing, we're still looking at and considering how that law impacts where we are in this procurement right now.
Well, the law hasn't passed yet. Would the MTA take a position on those bills? I'm not sure it has passed yet, right?
We haven't taken a position on that bill, but we're taking a look at all of our options as to how we respond to that.
Okay. In regards to that specific contractor?
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We're at the end of our hour here. Are we done? Yeah, we're done. I'm sorry, we don't have more time to take another question here. So, Robert Smith, I thank you for being on the show today. Robert Smith, CEO and administrator of the Maryland Transit Administration. Now, just to remind people about a couple of those websites that you cited earlier, Baltimore Red Line is one of them.
That's correct.
A website if you want information about the status of the Red Line. And you mentioned another one.
MTA.maryland.gov.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you, Dan.
Yep, and for keeping the buses running on a snowy day. All right, so that's the first hour of Midday. We thank Robert Smith and the MTA for being here to answer our questions. If you have further questions for him, you can send us an email. We'll pass it along to him. We'll take a break here, and then we'll have the second hour of our show today, which is Midday on Health with Dr. John Smarr. As we take a break, we have lunch from Atwaters. Atwaters, which supports local radio, local farmers, and local appetites. Atwaters, located at Belvedere Square, the shops at Kenilworth, Bear Hills, or Main Street, Catonsville. Visit atwaters.biz to support them and to get more information about their goods. Thank you very much to Atwaters for providing lunch for our guests. Please stay tuned for the news, and we'll see you for the second hour.